This is an interview with Jimi Hendrix. It was done in London about 2 weeks after his second album was released. I'm going to make some comments about my impressions of Hendrix and point out some things to look for when you listen to this interview. It's a good interview. When I met Jimi Hendrix, my first impression was his presence was so strong. It was sort of like stepping into a field of electricity. And I don't know if it's because of the giant amps that he was working with or just being a superstar and having all that energy directed at you, you know. But I wish there had been a way that this tape could have captured some of that vibrancy that I felt at that moment. I did this interview mainly because I wanted to meet him, and I honestly did not have one question ready. I figured that, you know, when the time came, I'd open my mouth and sort of a question would come out. We've all heard interviews where the interviewer is so involved lining up the next question that he or she doesn't hear what the person's trying to say. Well, I didn't have a next question. I just listened to what he was saying, and what he was saying led to the next question. And he was so sensitive, as you'll hear. He could see me listening, and he really opened up.
You really hate these interviews.
Oh, no, well, it's all right, you know.
All right, I mean, you do have a lot, you know.
Pardon?
A lot of people bothering you about interviews.
Well, like, yeah, to tell the truth, yeah, there is a lot, you know, but it's all right, though, you know, like, sometimes you just feel like talking. Sometimes you don't, though, you know.
Yeah.
Just going in different moods.
Yeah. Okay, so some of the usual.
Yeah,
go ahead.
That's all right. No, it doesn't bother me at all. I just want to get this light for a second.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You're originally from Buffalo, and you've been here about...
No, not from Buffalo. No,
God,
I'm from Seattle, Washington, originally.
Oh,
but I used to live...
That?
I lived all over the States, though. And then I wound up in New York, you know, not too long ago.
Yeah.
But I lived all over the States. I stayed in Buffalo for about a month or two, and it was too cold up there.
Well, yeah, but if you were in Seattle, you know, it can't be any colder in Buffalo.
No, but Seattle has a different type of cold, though, you know. It's a different kind... It's a nice coldness, you know.
Yeah.
It isn't so... cutting as Buffalo. Anyway, there's this girl up there trying to work roots on me, work this voodoo stuff, keep me there, you know. I had to go to the hospital and all that, but I could make that scene.
What do you mean you had to go to the hospital?
Well, like, you know, she tried working roots. You know, that's a scene like a, they might put a, you know, there's different things they can do. They can put something in your food or either put some hair in your shoe, you know, some of the hair in your shoe. Voodoo stuff, yeah.
Mojo.
Yeah, and all that kind of stuff, yeah.
Right, yeah.
Well, she tried that, and I don't know. She must have tried it half-heartedly, because I was just only sick in the hospital for about 2 or 3 days.
Do you ever get involved in that scene, other than...
Not anymore. Really, you know, like, around in the southern United States, you know, they have a lot of scenes like that going on.
Yeah.
But, you know, if I see it happen, or if I feel it happen, then I believe it.
Yeah.
You know, but not necessarily if I just hear it being talked about.
What about charms and things like this, you know?
Oh, yeah. If a person, you know, a person gives off, they give off certain, many, you know, electric shocks anyway,
right,
really.
Yeah, energies.
Yeah, yeah. And so then if they can, they can actually get these things together, really, you know, if the vibrations are strong enough to get these charms working, you know, they can actually do it.
I was watching you when you were talking to this girl that came in. I think she sent you some clothes for you.
Oh, yeah, yes.
Yeah, that was very nice, because you were really you were really watching her, and you were really taking her in. I mean, take her in, and I mean, just like sizing up.
She seemed like a nice girl. I like to take her home and, you know, scrub her up a little bit, and then, you know, go into the scene, and then get the clothes measured up, maybe. Oh, that's right. Yeah, she's supposed to come over there for that name. But see, I don't go back, you know, like some girls, you don't go by appearance. Mm. You go by different, there's other things that girls have to offer besides their looks, you know, that makes you might want to be with them, you know, for a second or two.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, well, there's other things, you know, besides that.
Yeah.
I don't, just go by just looks, you know, because, boy, we know the story, you know, some of them, this one, some of the worst people in the world. But, you know, you go by other things. I don't know what it is. You can just feel little things. Say, damn, I might want to be with her. I don't know. Let me check myself there, see what happens. It's great.
Yo, what about this? I mean, I mentioned, you know, that needless to say, a lot of people are envious, me included, you know.
Not necessarily, really.
Yeah.
Well, you shouldn't, because, you know, if you're not used to it, well, it could kill you, really. really. But this is another way of communication. That's why other people can't understand and say, "Well, damn, why are you with so many people?" You know, I said, "Well, I don't necessarily be, you know, touching those people all the time. I'll just be talking to them. Some I talk to, and then others, you know, well, you know, therefore, and thereafter." This is a scene like it's if it's part of you, you know. This is nature. I don't know. I just can't help it. That's all. It's a scene like that's another way of communication, though. You have your own ways, you know. Some people just communicate better by, you know, not even knowing each other's name, by saying, "Hey, hi, how you doing there? Would you come with me there for a minute?" And then, you know, it's all in, and you do that. And you can be the best of friends then.
Yeah.
Some even get married after that.
Have to find it. It just sort of flow with it when you start to get this, you know, this image, which, you know, as you...
Oh, it was worse before, because I used to be on the block starving, you know. And girls used to help me and all that, you know. Girls are some of my best friends, because they used to help me, you know, and really help me, too.
Yeah.
And ever since then, that's why I say to myself, well, any girl I meet now, I want to try to show my appreciation for what they did for me before. No, serious, though. It's just... I don't know, it's just nature.
Yeah.
I really don't care what our records, as far as chart-wise. We had this one that only made number 11, you know. His name, The Burning of the Midnight Lamp, which everybody around here hated. They said that was the worst record, you know. But to me, that was the best one we ever made. Not far as recording, because the recording technique was really bad. You know, you couldn't hear the words so good. Probably that's what it was.
Yeah, are you satisfied with the recording technique generally?
No, not at all.
Yeah. What about on the LPs? Same thing?
Not at all. Worse even on the LPs. It makes me so mad. Because, see, that's part of us.
Yeah.
And, like, see, like, we recorded and everything, and then all of a sudden, something happens and it just comes out all screwed up and you just get so mad you just don't want to know about it anymore. Like our next LP, every track is going to have to be right or else I'm just, you know, just going to forget about it. I mean, well, not forget about it. That's the way say that, you know,
right,
but you're not.
Yeah.
But that's the way I feel.
Do you think they're better in the States as far as recording? Or it really depends upon the engineer?
Well, like, it depends on what you want, really. All depends on where you go to. It really depends on so many things. The cutting of it, the cutting of it depends on the whole, that's the whole scene. You can get in there and mix and mix and mix and get such a beautiful sound, and when it's time to cut it, they could just screw it up so bad.
Jesus, I don't understand.
I know. I wouldn't understand that either, because it comes out all bad. Because they go by levels and all that. Some people don't have imagination. See, when you cut a record, right before it's being printed, when you cut the master, if you want a sound where you can really deep sound, you know, where you have depth and all this, you must almost remix it again right there, the cutting place. And 99% don't even do this. They just go and say, "Oh yeah, turn it up there, make sure that it doesn't go over there, make sure it doesn't go under," you know. And there it is. It's nothing but one dimensional.
Yeah. Do you get the time that you need? I mean, because it's so costly anyway.
We did
studios.
The money doesn't make any difference to me.
Yeah,
because that's what I make the money for, is to make better things, you know, happen. I don't have no value of money at all. That's my only fault, because I just get the things that I see and want, and or either try to put it into music. I want to have a stereo where it goes up. The sound goes up and behind and underneath, you know. But all you can get now is just across and across.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Our new LP was made in 16 days, which I'm very sad about, you know.
The one that's just out recently, yeah. Really.
But no use even talk about, you know, discussing why, because it really is a bad scene. But just makes me mad, though. It could have been so much better.
It's mainly the sound quality.
Well, the songs could have been better, too. You know, that's what I think, though. So they finish, and you got a completely new ideas.
Yeah, right. Well, it's good. I mean, in a sense, because your mind's moving along, you know, purring along nicely.
Yeah, it's not necessarily getting any better, but like, you might move to different things, you know.
Do you feel the groups are free to change as they want to?
No, half of them aren't. They're all thinking about their career and thinking about their future so much. I really don't give a damn about my future or career. I just want to make sure I can get out what I want, you know.
Yeah.
You know, that's why I say we're very lucky, because we didn't have, you know, all of us didn't have that, you know. I said, "Oh, well, you know, it'd be great if we did, you know, make it nice."
Yeah.
But I really wouldn't care, as long as we could be happy with what we're doing, like recording and stuff like that, or do what we want to do. We're still you know, we're not really doing what we want. But that's, you know, completely
different. What about the new LP? You've been thinking about this?
Yeah. Well, I wanted to make it a double LP, you know, which would be almost impossible. And have about...
Because of the cost.
Well, yeah, it's a big hassle. You know, nobody doesn't want to do that. The record producers and the companies don't want to do that. I'm willing to spend every single penny on it if I thought it was good enough. But there you go, you know. I do that, and then they leave me out there.
What about the length of the songs, too? I mean, would you like them to be much longer?
It depends on what kind of song it is. If it's a song with about three or four movements, well, yeah, like this one song I wrote named Eyes and Imagination. That's the name of it. Mm. And it's about 14 minutes long. But it's telling about every sentence or every two sentences tell a completely different story. Mm. It's nothing but imagination. It starts off with this baby crying, you know. A brand new baby has been born, and then you hear these bullets, you know, in the background. You know, it's nothing but this imagination. And it's every sentence tells a different story, and it's about, but it goes in about four major movements, but I always go back to this one little thing. You must have that one little thing through it, you know, that one little. But I don't even know, there's so many songs I wrote that we haven't even done yet that we'll probably never do. It's because, there's a lot of things around here that's really bad. So.
Yeah. Yeah, it's okay. Yeah.
You know, we must be Elvis Presley's and rock and rolls and trogs. We must be that.
Yeah, that's where it's at, isn't it?
And there'll be no smoking in the gas chamber. Mm. I see.
Do you think people will be doing longer numbers if you're trying to...
Well, like, if they have something...
Like moving towards maybe even symphonies.
Yeah, know? I think they should if they have something to offer, really. If the number really has to be long, they said, well, I got this number, but I just can't get it together unless it's... I just need more time on it. Well, then they should, really should. They should never hold, you know, time like that because of a number. You know the song that we had named Purple Haze?
Yeah.
That was about... it had about 1,000 words. And it... this makes me so mad because that isn't even a Purple Haze, you know?
What do you mean? That
I don't know, man. I'm just a frustrated old hen. That's what I feel like. But that was, you should have heard it, man. I had it written out. It's about going through all these, this land, you know, this mythical. Because that's what I had to do, is write a lot of mythical scenes. You know, like the history of the wars on Neptune and all this mess, you know. And the reason why the rings are there, you know. You have all these, see like how they got the Greek gods and all that mythology. Well, you can have your own mythology scene or write, you know, fiction, complete fiction, though, you know. I mean, anybody could say, well, I was walking down the street and I see an elephant floating through the sky. Well, it has no meaning at all, you know. There's nothing imagined except this is an elephant there, you know. And if you don't watch out, you might break your neck.
Do you think you'll be able to make more demands as you continue?
This whole thing's going to blow wide open soon. Can you remember when you was a little baby? I think you just come, your memory comes through.
About the age of 2.5.
Yeah.
But it came back like a dream.
Yeah, there you go. When you think about it now, it's just blank before that, then you think of that. But I think that's where you come about on other scenes too, you know. Because human beings die too easily, you know. You know, it's the first thing.
What about the animal? You said the animal.
Like you might see an animal or something like that, and also you might have a very funny feeling go through you for a second.
Do you mean like looking into his eyes, or necessarily, or like, just the animal itself?
Yeah, one time I seen this deer, you know, and because I see a lot of deers around where I used to be from. And I said, wait, something went through me for once, like I'd seen him before. I mean, like, I had some real close connections with that deer for one split second, and then it just went away like that, you know. That happens. You know, like a lot of friends of mine told me about that happened to them, you know. Have you ever laid in bed and you was in this complete state where you couldn't move or couldn't enough like that, but you know, you're like that and you feel like you're going deep and deep into something, not sleep, but it's something else.
Yeah, exactly.
And every time I go into that, then I say, oh hell, I'm scared as hell. You know, you get all scared and stuff. So you try to say, help, help. You can't move, you can't sleep, but you say, help, help. You finally get out of it, you know, because you just can't move. It's a very funny feeling. But one time I was going to try it. One time that feeling was coming through me, you know, I said, oh, here we go. This time I'm going to see if I'm going to let it happen, see where I go to, or see what happens, you know. So it was really getting really scary, man. It's going like that, you know. I said, I'm not even asleep, you know. So this is really strange. And somebody knocked on the door, you know. I said, oh. Because I wanted to find out.
Can you remember something? It's really far back.
I can remember when the nurse put the dice. I remember when.
Can you really?
Yeah, when the nurse. I don't know what I was there for, but I remember when I used to wear diapers. Yeah. And then she was like talking to me. She took me out of the this crib or something like that. And then she held me up to the window. This was in Seattle. Mm. And she was showing me something up against the sky. And it was fireworks and all that. It must have been the 4th of July, you know. Because I remember her putting the diaper on me and almost sticking me, you know. I was asleep, you know. And then she put like that. I remember I didn't feel so good, you know. I must have been in the hospital sick about something. And I had a bottle and all that kind of stuff. And then she held me up to the window. She's saying something about it. And I was looking, and the sky was this
almost an acid thing going on.
Wow, that's right. That's what it was, because only beforehand, my first trip there. The nurse turns me on. Being high off the penicillin she probably gave me. So.
Can you remember any others?
Well, I was small enough to fit in a clothes basket. I remember when I was small enough to fit in a clothes basket. You know the straw clothes baskets they have in America?
Yeah.
You put all the dirty clothes in. And there's only about like that.
They call them hampers or
something. Yeah, hampers. Yeah. I remember my cousin and I was in there playing around.
Oh,
yeah. But that must have been when I was about 3 or something like that. And like sometimes when you're sitting around, then you start remembering some of the things that happened beforehand. Those are the first two that comes to my mind. And some dreams that I had when I was real little, you know. Like my mother was being carried away on this camel. And it was a big caravan. She's saying, well, I'm going to see you now. And she's going under these trees. And you can see the shade, you know, the leaf patterns across her face. But she's going under this, you know, like that. And the sun, you know how the sun shines through a tree. And if you go under the shadows of the tree, the shadows go across your face. Well, these were in green and yellow shadows. Like, she's saying, well, I won't be seeing you too much anymore, you know, so I'll see. And then about 2 years after that, she died, you know. And I said, yeah, but where are you going though, like that? You know, I remember that. I always really remember that. I never did forget. There's some dreams you never forget.
Yeah.
Like one time, this is one dream. You go down like that, this real big hill, but it has real long grass, and then there's a whole lot of bananas down the floor, at the floor of this hill, but they're all spread all over, and they're growing from the ground by each one separate. And I remember that, and then we were skating across that. I don't know how we were, but what you do is you pour this stuff out that we made up. You know, it's big bags. You pour it out across the bananas, and it fills up all the gaps, and then you skate across it. You know, I remember those things, you know.
You must have been dreaming in color when you were very young.
Oh, definitely. I don't remember too many. The closest to a black and white dream I ever had was in pastel shades, you know?
Yeah.
One time I was in pastel shades, like it was maroon and dark, you know, and then light, very light maroon. And then this big gold cliff out of the middle of nowhere. That was great. And that was the closest I ever got to black and white. People really believe that every single person that's born here is completely different, you know. I mean, that's true, but through the times, can you imagine all these, like, what if we all are supposed to go to heaven and all that? Can you imagine all these people who died beforehand, and all of us, all of in heaven,
yeah,
all of on top of each other? Hey, man, move over, man. I don't have the room up here. It's a hill. You had no business dying, did you? So, oh, God. So can you imagine that? Wow.
This has been an interview with Jimi Hendrix. Your guide has been Meatball Fulton.